So just to sort of recap for those of you who have not been here before for this section, we are reading from page 171 through Keys of the Kingdom, which brings us to page 276. So 171 to 276. The first story there that we read was Dr. Bob's nightmare as the co-founder, and then the following nine stories. So 10 total stories under the rubric of pioneers. Tonight we are on page 208, Our Southern Friend, week 5 of our 10-week cycle. Going quickly. And our Southern Friend is Fitz Mayo. And Fitz was the number two man that Bill gets success with after he comes back from Akron. He comes back from Akron in September of 35. He starts hunting down alcoholics at Towns Hospital, where he ultimately got sober. First guy he gets sober is Hank Parkhurst. Story's not in the book. Why?
He went out,
and they took a story out. We can read his story where? In Experience, Strength, and Hope. AA produces a book, Experience, Strength, and Hope, and every story that's removed from first, second, third edition are all kept there. And his story is the unbeliever, Hank Parkhurst, first to get sober, that Bill is successful with. The second success is our Southern friend, Fitz Mayo, originally from Maryland, hence our Southern friend. And I think there's some great details here. I think besides being a pioneer, what would be a reason why we'd include this story? Well, he goes from atheist to very enthusiastic spiritual follower. So there's a big conversion here. So I think, and it's immediate. It's an experience. It's not an awakening. And we're going to see some of the verbiage regarding that. Born in 1897, died very young, age 46, of cancer, I believe. I think it comes up in the reading. He goes to enlist in World War II and is diagnosed when he goes to enlist in the 40s. Okay, here we go. Page 208. Pioneer AA, minister's son, and Southern farmer. He asked, "Who am I to say there is no God?" So if you say that, by definition, it means you are an atheist. No God. Not, I don't know if there's God. No God. Atheist. Father is an Episcopal minister, and his work takes him over long drives on bad roads. His parishioners are limited in number, but his friends are many. For to him, race, creed, or social position makes no difference. It is not long before he drives up in the buggy. He and old Maud are glad to get home. Maud's the horse. So. The drive was long and cold, but he was thankful for the hot bricks that some thoughtful person had given him for his feet. Soon supper is on the table. Father says grace, which delays my attack on the buckwheat cakes and sausage. Bedtime comes. I climb to my room in the attic. It is cold, so there is no delay. I crawl under a pile of blankets and blow out the candle. The wind is rising and howls around the house, but I am safe and warm. I fall into a dreamless sleep. I am in church. Father is delivering his sermon. A wasp is crawling up the back of the lady in front of me. I wonder if it will reach her neck. Shucks! It has just flown away. At last, the message has been delivered. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. I hunt for a nickel to drop in the plate so that mine will be seen. I am in another fellow's room at college. Freshman, said he to me, do you ever take a drink? I hesitated. Father had never directly spoken to me about drinking, but he never drank any, so far as I knew. Mother hated liquor and feared a drunken man. Her brother had been a drinker and had died in a state hospital for the insane. But his life was unmentioned, so far as I was concerned. I had never had a drink, but I had seen enough merriment in the boys who were drinking to be interested. I would never be like the village drunkard at home. Well, said the older boy, do you? Once in a while, I lied. I could not let him think I was a sissy. He poured out two drinks. Here's looking at you, he said. I gulped it down and choked. I didn't like it, but I would not say so. A mellow glow stole over me. This wasn't so bad after all. Sure I'd have another. The glow increased. Other boys came in. My tongue loosened. Everyone laughed loudly. I was witty. I had no inferiorities. Why, I wasn't even ashamed of my skinny legs. This was the real thing. A haze filled the room. The electric light began to move. Then two bulbs appeared. The faces of the other boys grew dim. How sick I felt. I staggered to the bathroom. Shouldn't have drunk so much or so fast, but I knew how to handle it now. I drink like a gentleman after this. And so I met John Barleycorn, the grand fellow who, at my call, made me a hail fellow well met, who gave me such a fine voice as we sang, Hail, hail, the gang's all here, and Sweet Adeline, who gave me freedom from fear and feelings of inferiority. Good old John, he was my pal, all right. Final exams of my senior year, and I may somehow graduate. I would never have tried, but mother counts on it so. A case of measles saved me from being kicked out during my sophomore year. But the end was in sight. My last exam and an easy one. I gaze at the board with its questions. Can't remember the answer to the first. I'll try the second. No soap there. I don't seem to remember anything. I concentrate on one of these questions. I don't seem to be able to keep my mind on what I'm doing. I get uneasy. If I don't get started soon, I won't have time to finish. No use. I can't think. I leave the room, which the honor system allows. I go to my room. I pour out half a tumbler of grain alcohol and fill it with ginger ale. Now back to the exam. My pen moves rapidly. I know enough of the answers to get by. Good old John Barleycorn. He can be depended on. What a wonderful power he has over the mind. He has given me my diploma. Underweight. How I hate that word. Three attempts to enlist in the service and three failures because of being skinny. True, I have recently recovered from pneumonia and have an alibi, but my friends are in the war or going, and I am not. I visit a friend who is awaiting orders. The atmosphere of eat, drink, and be merry prevails, and I absorb it. I drink a lot every night. I can hold a lot now, more than the others. So now we're talking about World War I. This is him trying to get into World War I. And he's being rejected because of his weight. I am examined for the draft and pass the physical test. I am to go to camp on November 13. The armistice is signed on the 11th, and the draft is called off. Never in the service. The war leaves me with a pair of blankets, a toilet kit, a sweater knit by my sister, and a still greater sense of inferiority. It is 10 o'clock of a Saturday night. I am working hard on the books of a subsidiary company of a large corporation. I have had experience in selling, in collecting, and in accounting, and I am on my way up the ladder. Then the crack up. Cotton struck the skids and collections went cold. We're talking about the Depression now. A $23 million surplus wiped out. Offices closed up and workers discharged. I and the books of my division have been transferred to the head office. I have no assistants and I am working nights, Saturdays, and Sundays. My salary has been cut. My wife and new baby are fortunately staying with relatives. I feel exhausted. Fitz's wife's name is Elizabeth. The doctor has told me that if I don't give up inside work, I'll have tuberculosis. But what am I to do? I have a family to support and I have no time to be looking for another job. I reach for the bottle that I just got from George, the elevator boy. I am a traveling salesman. The day is over and business has not been so good. I'll go to bed. I wish I were home with the family and not in this dingy hotel. Well, well, look who's here. Good old Charlie. It's great to see him. How's the boy? A drink? You bet your life. We buy a gallon of corn because it is so cheap. Yet I am fairly steady when I go to bed. Morning comes. I feel horrible. A little drink will put me on my feet, but it takes others to keep me there. I become a teacher in a boys' school. I am happy in my work. I like the boys, and we have lots of fun in class and out. The doctor bills are heavy, and the bank account is low. My wife's parents come to our assistance. I am filled with hurt pride and self-pity. I seem to get no sympathy for my illness and have no appreciation for the love behind the gift. So I had to read that a couple of times, but he's not appreciative of the money that he's receiving from the wife's parents. Gratitude. I call the bootlegger and fill up my charred keg, but I do not wait for the charred keg to work. I get drunk. My wife is extremely unhappy. Her father comes to sit with me. He never says an unkind word. He is a real friend, but I do not appreciate him. We are staying with my wife's father. Her mother is in critical condition at a hospital. I cannot sleep. I must get myself together. I sneak downstairs and get a bottle of whiskey from the cellarette. I pour drinks down my throat. My father-in-law appears. Have a drink? I ask. He makes no reply and hardly seems to see me. His wife dies that night. My mother has been dying of cancer for a long time. She is near the end now and is in a hospital. I have been drinking a lot, but never get drunk. Mother must never know. I see her about to go. I return to the hotel where I am staying and get gin from the bellboy. I drink and go to bed. I take a few more the next morning and go to see my mother once more. I cannot stand it. I go back to the hotel and get more gin. I drink steadily. I come to at 3 a.m. The indescribable torture has me again. I turn on the light. I must get out of the room or I shall jump out the window. I walk miles. No use. I go to the hospital where I have made friends with the night superintendent. She puts me to bed and gives me a hypodermic. I am at the hospital to see my wife. We have another child, but she is not glad to see me. I have been drinking while the baby was arriving. Her father stays with her. It is a cold, bleak day in November. This is November 34. I have fought hard to stop drinking. Each battle has ended in defeat. I tell my wife I cannot stop drinking. She begs me to go to a hospital for alcoholics that has been recommended. I say I will go. She makes the arrangements, but I will not go. I'll do it all myself. This time, I'm off of it for good. I'll just take a few beers now and then. It is the last day of the following October, a dark, rainy morning. I come to on a pile of hay in a barn. I look for liquor and can't find any. I wander to a table and drink 5 bottles of beer. I must get some liquor. Suddenly, I feel hopeless, unable to go on. I go home. My wife is in the living room. She had looked for me last evening after I left the car and wandered off into the night. She had looked for me this morning. She had reached the end of her rope. There is no use trying anymore, for there is nothing to try. Don't say anything, I say to her. I am going to do something. So we see there the key was the complete hopelessness. Suddenly I feel hopeless, unable to go on. There it is. There's the beginning right there. So he says to her, don't say anything. I am going to do something. I am in the hospital for alcoholics, Towns Hospital. So now we're in October 35. I am an alcoholic. The insane asylum lies ahead. Could I have myself locked up at home? One more foolish idea. I might go out west on a ranch where I couldn't get anything to drink. I might do that. Another foolish idea. I wish I were dead, as I have often wished before. I am too yellow to kill myself. 4 alcoholics play bridge in a smoke-filled room. Anything to get my mind from myself. The game is over, and the other 3 leave. I start to clean up the debris. One man comes back, closing the door behind him. He looks at me. "You think you are hopeless, don't you?" he asks. "I know it," I reply. "Well, you're not," says the man. "There are men on the streets of New York today who were worse than you, and they don't drink anymore." "What are you doing here then?" I ask. "I went out of here 9 days ago saying that I was going to be honest." "But I wasn't," he answers. So the lack of honesty got him drunk, which has him back in the hospital. He's back in detox. "A fanatic," I thought to myself, but I was polite. "What is it?" I inquire. Then he asked me if I believe in a power greater than myself, whether I call that power God, Allah, Confucius, Prime Cause, Divine Mind, or any other name. I told him I believe in electricity and other forces of nature. But as for a God, if there is one, he has never done anything for me. Then he asks me if I'm willing to right all the wrongs I have ever done to anyone, no matter how wrong I thought the others were. Am I willing to be honest with myself about myself and tell someone about myself? And am I willing to think of other people, of their needs, instead of myself, in order to get rid of the drink problem? "I'll do anything," I reply. "Then all of your troubles are over," says the man, and leaves the room. The man is in bad mental shape, certainly. I pick up a book and try to read, but I cannot concentrate. I get in bed and turn out the light, but I cannot sleep. Suddenly, a thought comes. Can all the worthwhile people I have known be wrong about God? Then I find myself thinking about myself and a few things that I had wanted to forget. I begin to see I am not the person I thought myself, that I had judged myself by comparing myself to others and always to my own advantage. It is a shock. Then comes a thought that is like a voice. Who are you to say there is no God? It rings in my head. I can't get rid of it. I get out of bed and I go to the man's room. He is reading. I must ask you a question. I say to the man, how does prayer fit into this thing? Well, he answers, you've probably tried praying like I have. When you've been in a jam, you've said, God, please do this or that. And if it turned out your way, that was the last of it. And if it didn't, you've said, there isn't any God, or he doesn't do anything for me. Is that right? Yes, I reply. That isn't the way, he continued. The thing I do is to say, God, here I am, and here are all my troubles. I've made a mess of things, and I can't do anything about it. You take me and all my troubles and do anything you want with me. Does that answer your question? Yes, it does, I answer. I return to bed. It doesn't make sense. Suddenly, I feel a wave of utter hopelessness sweep over me. I am in the bottom of hell, and there a tremendous hope is born. It might be true. I tumble out of bed onto my knees. I know not what I say. But slowly a great peace comes to me. I feel lifted up. I believe in God. I crawl back into bed and sleep like a child. Some men and women come to visit my friend of the night before. He invites me to meet them. They are a joyous crowd. I have never seen people that joyous before. We talk. I tell them of the peace and that I believe in God. I think of my wife. I must write her. One girl suggests that I phone her. What a wonderful idea! My wife hears my voice and she knows that I have found the answer to life. She comes to New York. I get out of the hospital and we visit some of these newfound friends. I am home again. And potentially many of those meetings are happening at 182 Clinton at his Tuesday night meeting at Bill's house. I am home again, meaning back in Maryland. I have lost the fellowship. Those who understand me are far away. The same old problems and worries still surround me. Members of my family annoy me. Nothing seems to be working out right. I am blue and unhappy. Maybe a drink. I put on my hat and dash off in the car. So he's sober, he gets home, and his life is still unmanageable. because he has gone back to self-will. He felt the vibe when he was in the fellowship and there was all this camaraderie and we're helping each other and whatnot. He gets home and he's stuck in the minutiae of the temporal world. He forgot the spiritual world. He's off kilter again. So his life will remain unmanageable due to self-will. And here it is. This is self-will. I put on my hat and I dash off in the car, thinking a drink's going to solve this. Get into the lives of other people is one thing the fellows in New York had said. I go to see a man I had been asked to visit and tell him my story. I feel much better. I have forgotten about a drink. Boy, there's the answer. Go and help somebody else. And what was the help? The help is nothing more than telling them your story. It's genius. I am on a train headed for a city. I have left my wife at home sick and have been unkind to her in leaving. I am very unhappy. Maybe a few drinks when I get to the city will help. A great fear seizes me. I talk to the stranger in the seat beside me. The fear and the insane idea are taken away. Things are not going so well at home. I am learning that I cannot have my own way as I used to. I blame my wife and children. Anger possesses me, anger such as I have never felt before. I will not stand for it. I pack my bag and I leave. I stay with some understanding friends. I see where I have been wrong in some respects. I do not feel angry anymore. Isn't that the purpose of the fifth step? I have all these resentments over that son of a gun, and then when I talk it out and I see my part in it, I don't feel the anger anymore. I return home and say I am sorry for my wrong. I am quiet again. Sounds like a ninth step to me. But I have not seen yet that I should do some constructive acts of love without expecting any return. So he hasn't gotten to the point of really understanding that all of this work up to this point is all about doing 12-step work. Constructive acts of love without expecting any return. He's not quite got that yet. I shall learn this after some more explosions. So he keeps taking his will back. He's recanting step three. But he gets it after some more explosions. I am blue again. And I think we all do see what the tendency on this guy is. Another reason why this story is chosen, he suffers from depression. Right? We're gonna link this text back to some earlier pages, and we're going to see it definitively say that. I am blue again. I want to sell the place and move away. I want to get where I can find some alcoholics to help and where I can have some fellowship. A man calls me on the phone. Will I take a young fellow who has been drinking for 2 weeks to live with me? Soon, I have others who are alcoholics and some who have other problems. So this is the beginning of he's actually a founder of AA Washington, D.C., living in Maryland, but very close to the Washington line. So he becomes the founder of AA Washington. Here's the seeds of it right here. I begin to play God. So he's doing it wrong, right? I'm going to save these guys. You know, I got all the answers. I begin to play God. I feel that I can fix them all. Wasn't this the theory that Bill was working on? All the guys he worked on prior to Dr. Bob was, I'm going to save that son of a gun because I got the answer. It wasn't until he said, I got to save myself in helping some. It's a complete shift. It's a complete, you can play with the words for a little bit, but it's a complete psychic change of a different way of looking at helping somebody. I do not fix anyone, but I am getting part of a tremendous education, and I have made some new friends. Nothing is right. Finances are in bad shape. I must find a way to make some money. The family seems to think of nothing but spending. People annoy me. I try to read. I try to pray. Gloom surrounds me. Why has God left me? I mope around the house. I will not go out and I will not enter into anything. What is the matter? I can't understand. I will not be that way. I'll get drunk. It is a cold-blooded idea. It is premeditated. I fix up a little apartment over the garage with books and drinking water. I am going to town to get some liquor and food. I shall not drink until I get back to the apartment. Then I shall lock myself in and read. And as I read, I shall take little drinks at long intervals. I shall get myself mellow and stay that way. I get in the car and drive off. Halfway down the driveway, a thought strikes me. I'll be honest anyway. I'll tell my wife what I am going to do. I back up to the door and go into the house. I call my wife into the room where we can talk privately. I tell her quietly what I intend to do. She says nothing. She does not get excited. She maintains a perfect calm. When I am through speaking, the whole idea has become absurd. Not a trace of fear is in me. Right? Sharing has a way of reducing our angst or fear or, you know, compulsive thought. Right? I laugh at the insanity of it. We talk of other things. Strength has come from weakness. I cannot see the cause of this temptation now, but I am to learn later that it began with my desire for material success becoming greater than my interest in the welfare of my fellow man. I learn more of that foundation stone of character, which is honesty. I learn that when we act upon the highest conception of honesty that is given us, our sense of honesty becomes more acute. I learn that honesty is truth, and that truth shall make us free. So a couple more things that I did want to make reference to. Just to go back to doctor's opinion, please. Roman numeral 30, XXXI. Roman numeral 30, XXXI. Okay, middle of the page, third paragraph. When I need a mental uplift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. So this is Dr. Silkworth speaking. The patient had made his own diagnosis and, deciding his situation hopeless, had hidden in a deserted barn determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and, in desperate condition, brought to me. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort. Unless I could assure him, which no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. This alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great that we felt his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology. And we doubted if even that would have any effect. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then, and he is as fine a specimen of manhood as one could wish to meet. So that's Fitz Mayo. That's Dr. Silkworth talking about that. Now, if you just turn to page 16, I just want to loop to that for a second, and then I'm going to shut up after one more thing after that. page 16, first full paragraph. An alcoholic in his cups is an unloving creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. So they're talking about Bill Cousins here. Bill and Lois go down to visit Fitz Mayo and his wife Elizabeth. And while down there, Bill Cousins commits suicide in Bill and Lois's house in 182 Clinton. And then if we would just turn to 55. Bottom of the page, last paragraph there. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. And then on page 56, you see it starts out with our friend. I'm not going to read it all. You can read it on your own. That is an additional data regarding Fitz Mayo. And then a couple of other little thoughts. Fitz Mayo was also instrumental in pushing for the big book to sound biblical. to sound like a spiritual text, which most of Akron was on board with that. But in New York, really, Fitzmaio was the only one wanted it to be far to the right. Akron wanted it far to the right. Fitzmaio wanted it far to the right. Bill was in the middle, didn't kind of have a real strong position either way, wanted it to sound a little bit more like an intellectual, like a college type textbook. And when we read in subsequent weeks, when we read the story, A Vicious Cycle, Jimmy Burwell was instrumental, along with Hank Parkhurst, with us sticking in God as we understood him, because they weren't comfortable with the God stuff. So it was sort of, this was Bill's mastery of getting an acceptable position that everybody got on board with. And then I'll just, I'll shut up with, Fitzmaio's sister loaned AA $1,000 when we were completely broke, and the printer would not give up any printed books. Like, if you don't have cash, you get no more books for sale. So Fitzmaio's sister gave us $1,000, which allowed the process to keep going on the books. And also when we were naming our big book, we talked about this last week, there was some discussion over the book being called The Way Out. And Fitzmaio was the one that went down in Washington to the Library of Congress and looked that title up. And there were 12 books already named The Way Out, and 13 was a no-no. So that went off the table. Another name that we were thinking about was 100 Men. And at that time, we had Florence Rankin as 1 year sobriety. And she said, time out. Can't be 100 Men. I'm female. It's worked on me. Got to come up with another name. And that's ultimately how Alcoholics Anonymous got named. If you'll notice, Florence Rankin's story is not in the fourth edition because she went out after about a year. And Fitzmaio was actually the person that was called down in Washington to identify the body. So just a little closing up there. And with that, I'll shut up.